The Guardian.
Hello, and welcome to Brexit Means. I'm Dan Roberts, The Guardian's Brexit policy editor, covering for John Henley, who's in France, anxiously awaiting the election results. So, over the weekend, the chickens came home to roost for Theresa May. After months of telling the British people that Brexit will be a breeze, it turns out things won't be so easy. Leaked accounts of a Downing Street meeting with EU Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker revealed the two are further apart than ever. One source told me the dinner was ice cold, and I don't think they meant the gazpacho. So with me to discuss what all this means going forward is Dan Boffey, The Guardian's Brussels bureau chief. Dan, sounds like quite a dinner. How's it going down in Brussels?
Well, I mean, it confirms everything that people thought anyway, really, that the Brits don't know what they're doing, that they're unrealistically hoping to get the divorce bill down to not far off, that the Brits think they can still force trade talks from the moment things kick off and after June the 8th. It's to them that Britain hasn't quite got to grips with what they regard as the political reality.
Do you think there's an element of this just being the sort of inevitable opening gambits on both sides? I mean, isn't it perfectly legitimate for the Brits to at least ask for these talks to be held at the same time and to at least question how much money they have to ask? I mean, what's wrong with that?
No, absolutely. It's perfectly reasonable for them to ask. They have asked and they've got their response. In terms of the money, there is wriggle room. The $60 billion involves lots of sort of contingent liabilities, which there may be a debate around. So that's kind of guarantees on loans. So if a loan goes bad in 20 years, the EU end up to, would Britain in 20 years' time be regarded as a guarantor and have to... There are bits and bobs in that $60 billion which can be sort of wriggled out of the UK. But the EU27 have decided they have to. Frankly, the EU27 are absolutely unified on this and they don't show any sign of moving. The UK have to work out the sum at the end. Otherwise, they're just, I'm sorry, the reality is the EU27 need that cash. Money talks.
But the language is equally intransigent from London at the moment. I mean, Theresa May also talks about having to do things a particular way and doesn't seem to brook much in the way of concession right now. I mean, how do they come back from this? Do you think we're increasing the chances of no deal happening at all?
Yeah, unfortunately, I do. Somebody quite senior within the European Commission said to me the other day, anything is possible on the EU level as long as there's political will. Anything, the treaties, they talk around here and the treaties is the Bible, but actually they'll cut corners, they'll make things happen. Juncker is a past master of it. They can make things happen if there's political will. But at the moment, it feels like the trust has completely ebbed away from this process, and I don't think it's entirely Britain's fault at all. I mean, was it entirely wise to leak the entire conversation from Downing Street? British officials being quoted saying that was a major blunder and that the trust has gone and they won't be trusting Juncker and his gang again. They just feel rather parlous at the moment. Quite how they're going to get it back, I'm not sure. Both sides have suggested this is kind of being drummed up in the media. Both Martin Seymour, the Juncker's head of cabinet, and Theresa May on the stump yesterday, saying, "Oh, this is kind of election fever, and people have heated this up a bit, and then maybe they're trying to sort of calm things down." But I wonder quite how it's going to work out.
Do you think it could have been any different? Do you think if there'd been a different set of characters around that table, things might have got off to a more consensual start? Or are we sort of looking at the inevitable clash of interests that Brexit was always going to involve?
I think it's always going to be a difficult process. Whenever money is involved, things are difficult, things are tricky. But both the net payees and the net payers, so those who pay the money into the budget and those who get the most out of the budget among the member states, both have an interest in really much cash out of Britain, and Britain was always going to push back. So that was always going to be an issue. In terms of characters, though, I do think Theresa May coming out with the whole "we'll no deal is better than a bad deal" was bad advice. She was badly advised to do that. I do think it was a mistake for Britain to talk about becoming a low-tax, low-regulation Singapore. I mean, that really did cut through to people. So you see that on the EU side, they talk quite a lot about a level playing field in the future. if there's any kind of trade deals, so no state aid, low tax, uncompetitive tax regimes in the UK. It kind of cut through. And also Theresa May is she's a very forthright negotiator. As Home Secretary, in all her negotiations, whether it's with the Police Federation or indeed with the EU over Home Affairs, over justice opt-outs, she's quite hard line. I wonder quite if Britain's got the leverage for her to be as tough as she's being at the moment. The EU think not, they're willing to push her.
Can you help me and people listening in the UK understand a little bit about how the pecking order works in Brussels? Because we've had three different delegations come through Downing Street in recent days. And they, although they've had quite a remarkably unified message, the tone's been very different. Donald Tusk sounded very sad about Brexit and certainly keen to try and remain, as Theresa May says, special friends. And Antonio Tajani, president of the EU Parliament, also came through with a more upbeat message. I just wonder, should they be discounting some of Juncker's sort of Luxembourg bluster here, or is it really the Commission that's going to be driving this?
Ultimately, it's the European Council. That's the body that represents the member states. Its membership is the EU27. They're the decision makers, and they'll tell Barnier. Barnier will have to answer to them ultimately. And so Donald Tusk is a key person. Antonio Tajani is slightly irrelevant. He is essentially the sort of speaker of the European Parliament. The European Parliament's not irrelevant, but Antonio Tajani is slightly, he's kind of, throughout this process, he's been the least newsworthy, and he's not sort of been bombastic, but it kind of doesn't matter. On the Commission, they are the day-to-day people. So what Barnier thinks and what he does day-to-day matters. But yes, it's Donald Tusk and the Council who will set the tone for things. The problem is, at the moment, the tone that the Council is setting, while they're being they're very sad about it up front, the member states want their cash, and they're very, very hard line on this. And the member states, who have lots of people living in Britain, want to ensure the full cortege, as Juncker called it, the full cortege of rights. And again, they're very hardline on that. These are the key things for them, and they're going to push. They're going to push Barnier on that to make sure that happens.
Cortege makes it sound like a funeral procession to English ears, but sounds pretty united. I mean, are there any moderating voices among the EU27? It sounds like Angela Merkel is very much on side, but will anybody else be telling Barnier to tone it down if this continues?
There is a great deal of willing. For example, there are a great deal of member states who really do want, they want to sort out a free trade deal, because they sell a lot of stuff to British consumers, and they don't want tariffs on their goods. And yes, once we get past the money and citizens issue, they'll be fighting hard to make sure a good deal is won. The French, for example, who won't necessarily be that bothered. They have their own interests. They want, for example, they want Air France to knock off EasyJet out within domestic flights within the EU. They'll want to make sure that their fishermen have all the same rights as they do today to British waters, and they'll go fighting about it. I mean, they really will. So there are voices who will back up the UK later down the line, and that's why you hear the EU27 talking about unity. You hear Juncker talking about unity all the time, and how must keep together, because they know later on that the member states will split apart, and there are voices there sort of saying, "Come on, let's come to a deal with Britain." But at this stage, there is complete unity. Clearly, from the readout of the Downing Street meal, that's not quite got through to Theresa May, and it probably should do. We're not too far away now.
Probably has by now, you think, don't you? So we talked a little bit about the money. What about this question of the timing of talks? Can they really insist that all of the, at least the framework, the formula for the divorce settlement is agreed before anything is discussed on trade? I mean, doesn't that fly in the face of the Article 50 requirement for discussion of future arrangements too?
Yes, so Article 50 says that during negotiations they should have a mind to the future arrangement. But that's within the 2 years, so it must be within the 2 years. They must sort of have a thought to what's going to happen after those 2 years. But if the EU27 say we need to do these bits first, and the EU27 aren't going to break away from that, and the EU27 are willing to push this all the way to the edge, there's not a great deal Britain can do. I'm afraid, I think May, you know, is not in her nature, but she's going to have to compromise on this to a certain extent. The best way to get trade talks get going as quickly as possible is to agree on citizens and the cash as soon as possible. And I think there will be a way around the money where they can get that done swiftly. I think she just needs to swallow her pride a bit and get on with it.
Mm. And on the citizens' rights, there's some suggestion, there's already a bit of counter-spinning going on in London, clearly, and there was a suggestion in the Telegraph this morning that Britain is already pushing hard for this and actually finding itself getting frustrated by the EU, wants to slow it down. Do you think there's any truth to that, or is that just more sort of counter-spin and bluster?
Well, I mean, we heard from the Danish Root Meal that Theresa May was saying, well, we can get this swiftly done, we can get it sorted in 2 weeks. But on the EU side, they're saying, well, yes, we could get it swiftly done and done in 2 weeks if we accepted Theresa May's plan for EU citizens' rights, but that's far from what actually people deserve, that it's a much more complicated situation than Theresa May gives it credit, that EU nationals should, in the future, retain, for example, rights to free healthcare if they come over to the UK, or at least there's an argument or a debate to be had about that. I think certainly May thinks that can be done swiftly. The EU would like it done swiftly, but they want it to be done, to their mind, properly. They want as many rights as possible to be retained by not only EU citizens who live in the UK at the moment, but EU citizens who may come to live in the UK later on.
Okay, so what happens next, do you think? When are they next due to meet? And will there be food, do you think? Or is that it now for dinners?
I can't imagine they'll have too many cosy chats from here on in. On the 22nd of May, the EU will finally, its member states will adopt what's going to be called the Commission's directives, which is the full kind of, all the nitty-gritty about what the EU wants to get out of the talks. And so after the 22nd of May, they are ready and willing, from the 23rd onwards, they're ready and willing to talk. They've agreed with the UK that they won't actually start formal negotiations until the 8th of June, so it's any time after that. However, there had been plans for David Davis and Michel Barnier to have behind-the-scenes secretive little chit-chats just to work out the parameters of what would be discussed, to work out how they would do it, how many days a week they would each spend in Brussels and whether they'd have officials with them and all the details and what food they might eat, I suppose. That was due to happen. It's not going to happen at the moment. And that's because of an additional little grenade that was thrown into the works, which is something called the mid-budget review. So the EU sets its budget sort of 7 years in advance. There was due to be a mid-budget review this week, where they were going to move the money around so that they'd have enough cash for migration crisis, which didn't foresee would be as big as it is, and such things. And Britain, on Monday, sent in an email saying, well, because of the general election, because of PERDA, because we don't want to bind the hands of a future administration, I'm afraid we're not willing to sign up to any changes in how money's going to be moved around. And Juncker is pretty furious about it. He sniffs mischief. He thinks maybe this is a way of the UK trying to cause trouble, just showing that they could cause trouble over the next 2 years unless the UK gets its way. So he actually brought this up in Downing Street. And on the weekend, his chief of staff tweeted that because of what Britain had done about the budget, and because Britain wasn't willing to sign off on the various changes of where the money was going to be spent, that they were not willing to have those pre-talk talks. So actually, they're going to start after the 8th of June. They're going to start pretty cold. I suspect the next meeting will be David Davis sat next to Michel Barnier, and they'll have to sort out all sorts of different things from there. And there won't have been any back channeling. It's a bit of a worry because that slows things down and the clock is ticking.
Yeah, this has got nasty fast, hasn't it? Well, I think we'll certainly be back for another podcast when that comes around. So thanks very much, Dan, for coming on. That's it for this week. Please subscribe and review us on all your favourite podcatchers and join the discussion on Twitter. If you want to get in touch about Brexit stuff, it's brexitpodcast@theguardian.com. And if you'd like to review the pod and be in with a chance of featuring in our podcast weekly column, email podcasts brexit@theguardian.com. Till next week, I've been Dan Roberts, the producer is Rowan Slaney, and this was Brexit Means. Thank you for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.